This episode of Stick Like Glue Radio is brought to you by Jim Palmer's Create Your Dream Business Now Academy, a one-of-a-kind live event where Jim will personally teach you how to market and grow a more profitable business faster, even in a crappy economy. During this event, Jim will reveal how to create a million-dollar platform on a shoestring budget. You'll learn how to generate a ton of content with ease, how to attract a steady stream of new customers, and you'll also network with other successful marketers and entrepreneurs. This not-to-be-missed event is May the 7th through the 9th in San Diego and will quite literally transform your business. Do not miss it. Get all the details and register today at www.dreambizacademy.com. That's www.dreambizacademy.com.
Hey friends, this is James Malinchak, featured on ABC's hit TV show Secret Millionaire and founder of BigMoneySpeaker.com, and you are listening to my good friend Jim Palmer on Stick Like Glue Radio.
Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Marketing and business building expert Jim Palmer, known internationally as the Newsletter Guru, is a serial entrepreneur, author, speaker, and coach to other entrepreneurs. Jim is the host of Newsletter Guru TV, a weekly web TV show featuring Jim's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice. Check it out today at www.newsletterguru.tv. Please welcome your host of Stick Like Glue Radio, Jim Palmer.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, refer more. Those are always great things in anybody's business. I am your host, Jim Palmer, your dream business coach. And as always, I am committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. I am so excited about this week's show because my very special guest is none other than me, your humble host. I'm going to be in the guest chair today. And, you know, I have been on an interview juggernaut, really thanks to my daughter Jessica and her team at Interview Connections. I think this is probably, in the last 2 weeks, interview number 20 or 21. And the reason for all these interviews is the release of my new book, Decide, The Ultimate Success Trigger. And so I was chatting with Jessica, and she said, you know what, I ought to interview you about your book and for your audience. So that's what we're going to do. So, Jessica, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. Excited to interview you on your podcast.
I appreciate you jumping into the host seat, and thank you so much. Your company, I mean, is doing gangbusters and just doing wonderful work for me, getting me all kinds of exposure and booked on tons of podcasts. So I thank you for that.
You're welcome. Our pleasure.
And with that, I'm going to turn my chair around, and now I'm going on the other side of the microphone. So,
okay, cool.
Let's have at it.
Yeah, so, you know, definitely really excited to interview you for this book. You know, I have, you know, I've read all of your books, read so many of your blog posts, and like a lot of your other, you know, friends have told you, this book is really your best book. And I think that's because you really got so transparent. You know, it's not another mindset book. It's not another marketing book. It's a book where you give so much valuable business coaching and business advice based on your own journey. And you really don't hold anything back. Why did you decide to write Decide? What was the push or the motivation that made you write a book that was so different than the rest?
And why did I decide to share all the scary crap that used to go in my head and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, so actually just yesterday as we're recording this, I did an interview with Adam Urbanski, the Millionaire Marketing Mentor. Adam is somebody I first met about 6 years ago and was a mentor to me, just super successful dude. We've become great friends in the last few years. But Adam said, you know, Jim, I'm going to just be completely transparent again. When I sent him an advance copy, and he said, look, I was going to write your review because you're a friend and I love your books. And I actually thought this was going to be another mindset book with, you know, some quotes from millionaires and billionaires and some good, you know, rah-rah entrepreneur stuff. He said, truthfully, I couldn't put it down because he actually learned some things about me that he didn't even know. And one of the reasons I did that, Jessica, was because, you know, it's very similar to the way I run my Dream Business Academy. I like when you can go somewhere and not just get information and education, but also inspiration. And for me personally, one of the ways that I get inspiration is when I hear from a speaker or somebody that has some success or doing something that I'm looking to do, I don't just want to know, like, how to do it. I want to know what they went through to get there. And so when I started writing this book, it is, for all intent and purposes, a mindset book. I'm trying hard not to call it that because, you know, it just, you get an automatic impression of what it is. But what I decided to do was get really transparent and vulnerable and share some of the stuff that I was not willing to do initially in the early years of my business, things that held me back for whatever reason. There's a lot of fear going on, head trash, different things, you know, the imposter syndrome. All of this I kind of talk about because I know from now coaching people for 6 years, I know there's a lot of people struggle with this. So there's information. It's a really – one of my friends actually said, and I kind of like this description. He said, Jim, this is a hit you between the eyes, kick you in the butt, hard nose, in-your-face coaching session disguised as a book. And that's kind of how I think a lot of people are going to hopefully take it.
I absolutely agree. You know, I saw something on Facebook recently. A friend of mine wrote, he said, some unsolicited advice. Don't do what the pros do now. Do what they did when they were where you were. And I think that your book really does that because, you know, I'm in about year two of my business. You're in year 13. So I can't necessarily do exactly what you're doing now. But by reading this book, you know, the reader really goes through stories of really what you were doing as you were getting started and the lessons you learned. Can you talk a little bit about some of the experiences you went through early on, the lessons learned, and how people can, you know, what people are going to learn in this book that they can apply to their journey now?
Yeah, you know what I want to do, Jessica? I'm going to answer your question. I want to call out just a few of the chapters so mm-hmm. people understand there's a lot of things that go on, and really everything falls under the umbrella of mindset. But I talk about head trash. I talk about deciding to survive. So like in my early years, especially in the first 12 months of business when I had no clients, and, you know, how do you keep going? You know, how do you keep borrowing money to keep the business alive and to feed the family? And what are the things you did? What are the different things you did? And so I talk about, first of all, you have to simply decide you are going to survive. I talk about how to be authentic, how to invest in yourself, the difference between an entrepreneur and a small business owner. I talk about the imposter syndrome. A lot of people, when they're first starting out, and again, every big business starts small, but, you know, a lot of you hear it's kind of commonplace today and much more accepted than it was 14 years ago about starting in your spare bedroom at the kitchen table, dining room table, whatever, and people had this fear of being found out, right? We talk about your unwillingness to delegate and get help, immunity to criticism, the need to be perfect, all these different things. Really, actually, if you don't get them under control, they will slow your growth. I kind of liken it to tying an anchor around your waist and just trying to run around the track. Every one of those things will hold you back. So it's interesting how I decided to write this book, because after I wrote Stop Waiting for It to Get Easier in October of 2013, I thought, yeah, that's five books in 5 years. I really wanted to take a break. And but after, you know, teaching at the Dream Business Academy, especially the one section that's titled Mindset, Money and Success, and so I talked about this relationship that people have with money. So many people are so emotional about it. They hate the word, you know, they hate even thinking of credit cards and things like that. And so, you know, I kind of talk about my early years and struggle with that. And When I taught that first, Jessica, in Las Vegas, because you were there, I saw like four people with tears in their eyes as I was retelling some of my story. And somebody came up to me, a couple people came up to me and shared some nice things. One person actually said, I'm so grateful you shared that. He says, I'm kind of right there now, and what you shared with me has given me the what I need to keep on keeping on, is how they phrased it. And he said, you need to share that. You need to share these stories with a bigger audience. And that was kind of the first planting of the seed that I knew another book had to be written.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. That was really impactful. And it's interesting how, you know, when you decided to launch Dream Business Academy, that was after a lot of your mentors and friends were pushing you to do it. And that now motivated you to write this book and be really transparent. So it's cool that when you take action and do things outside of your comfort zone, so so much more growth happens. Even in year 13 of your business, when you're doing pretty well, there's still so much more growth to happen. So let's get into talking about some of these main lessons that you go through in the book. I love the chapter on head trash. That really, really resonated with me. I know that you pulled out some examples of your coaching clients and what they've said, and it really rung true with me. Do you want to talk a little bit about head trash and how it, what it is, how it holds entrepreneurs back?
Yep. So head trash is what I call, everybody has head trash, right? And so, what I talk about is that head trash are all the thoughts, feelings, you know, how you think. It's everything that goes on, because I think when you're born, you know, everything that you hear, that you witness, see, listen to, are told. I mean, maybe there's stuff you're never going to amount to anything. God forbid somebody says that to a kid, right? So there's these different things that go on. And so all these thoughts and, you know, perhaps self-limiting beliefs are what I call head trash. And so it affects how people make decisions to either invest, go forward, to start a business in the first place. And so there's a lot of head trash that I had. And especially, you know, I talk about more in my later years in 2006 when I started transitioning to the business I had now. There were several things that I knew successful people did in kind of the space that I wanted to operate in. I actually named them: becoming a speaker, becoming an author, doing videos, you know, obviously working with a coach, investing in a coach, joining a mastermind, and doing your own live events. I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, because everybody that I've studied, witnessed, was friends with, and learned from, these were things that they were doing. And I'm very candid and said, you know what, I was not willing to do those. I mean, the fear of public speaking is very real. I'm, you know, the old Seinfeld episode, it's fear of public speaking is before death. If there's a funeral, you'd rather be in the box than in, you know, delivering the eulogy or however that goes. But yeah, it's a very real fear. But becoming a speaker is one powerful way to grow your business, because instead of just growing your business one-to-one, like when you first start out and go to networking events or whatever, it gives you a chance to be one-to-many. Whether there's 30 people in the room, 300, or 1,000, it allows that many people to learn about you. So becoming a speaker is really important, and all the other things that I talked about. And the last one I mentioned is the most current or freshest version of me kicking head trash to the curb. And, you know, I knew that when you have a coaching program, doing your own seminars is one of the best ways to grow your coaching program. But for more than a couple of years, some, you know, mentors of mine were pushing me, and I always had one excuse after the other. Well, I'm kind of busy, and I'm not sure it's the right time, and blah, blah, blah. I just made up excuses, which is what we do when we have a fear issue. And so someone might go, well, and somebody people have said this to me, well, Jim, you appear very confident. Why? And I'll tell you, you know what goes on in your head, even if you appear confident? And I shared, when I was thinking about doing a live event, what goes on in my head is, okay, what if I fail? What if nobody comes? What if I owe the hotel a ton of money? And by the way, you got to block out a bunch of rooms and guarantee they'll be sold. You got the caterer, the video guy. I mean, if you bum, you could be out a lot of money, right? And then the flip side of that is, what if I'm successful and people do come, but I freeze, or I don't know what to say, or I suck, or people want refunds? You know, it's very scary when you put yourself out there. And finally, you know, what I think happens in a lot of these different cases, no matter what your fear is, Jessica, a lot of times you have what I describe as your 3 a.m. holy crap moment. And the 3 a.m. holy crap moments, when you're laying in bed, wide awake, and it's in the dark, your eyes are open, you're looking up at the dark ceiling going, holy crap, how am I going to make payroll this week? Holy crap, I haven't paid myself, the owner of this business, in over a month. Holy crap, I've got bills to collect. I've got nobody signing up for my programs. And then you have to get real with yourself and recognize, as my great friend Melanie Benson Strick says, you have to stop being the impediment to your own growth and really kind of man up or woman up and take care of business and start doing the things that successful people do. And the way I'm going to share this, the way that she made me realize this and face up to it is, I was thinking, as I'm going down this highway, like growing my business, I come up a bunch, every lane in front of me was blocked, and everything was every kind of big truck in front of me represented something. You're not out speaking. You're not out doing this. You're not doing your live events. They're all things. So I was kind of like going in the breakdown lane, trying to go around them real slow and kind of get. I was trying to be at the lead of the pack without doing all the things that I was willing to do. And she said, for you to think that you're going to have the success that you want to have, that all these other people are having, but not do what they're doing, or at least something similar, is not reality. And that was a real. That was a real head slap in my face moment. I'm grateful because Melanie's been my mindset coach for years. And so, again, I've kicked all of this head trash to the curb, and my business has grown as a result.
I can really relate to a lot of that. I mean, I do weekly videos because that is what I learned from you. And at Dream Business Academy, it gave me the kick in the pants. Sorry, I'm going to start doing weekly videos. And one thing I hear a lot is, oh, you look so calm and collected and, you know, and I'm like, you know, just because, you know, you appear that way, but there's still head trash going on. And so, you know, I can definitely relate to that. You know, when I was reading this in the head trash, I'm not sure if it was in, which chapter it was in, but there was definitely, you were talking about head trash around raising prices. And I don't know if the quote from Gary or Dr. Carey, who you've quoted in the book, if it was in the head trash chapter or the price increase chapter, but that really resonated with me because I think raising your prices is so scary because you think I'm going to raise my prices and nobody's going to sign up, right? Nobody's going to buy what I have to offer. But usually it's the opposite. Can you talk about why we should raise our prices or when we should raise our prices?
Yeah, it's in the title, Decide to be Profitable. And that may seem like a duh, well, no kidding, Jim, but you know what? A lot of people struggle with charging fees that they're worth, charging fees that are an appropriate reward for the value they're delivering to their customers, clients, or in Dr. Carrie Drisga's case, the patients that she serves. We all, you know what it is, a lot of it, Jessica, is first of all, there's fear in the early years. Well, if you get into an industry and you see other people charging this, you hate to come in like super high. A lot of times people say, well, I better come in a little low and try and gain business. I don't suggest that. You want to separate yourself and differentiate yourself. But then as you go along, what happens, in the mindset of a lot of small business owners is they become kind of so good at what they do, their core skill, it doesn't take them that long. And so in your business, I mean, you've really perfected how to go out and find great guests for your podcast hosts that are your clients. So the more you do it, really the easier it gets. So you could have some head trash perhaps about how do I keep charging my fees now and how do I raise them when it doesn't take that long. And I'm not diminishing what you do, but
right.
I'll use myself as an example. I could write and design a really, really kick-butt newsletter hour. And when I think about, well, what should I charge for an hour, not even saying what my hourly rate is, but what I realize is that it's not the hour that it took me to do that. That's not how I base my fees. What I base my fees on is the value that I'm delivering. So I know for a fact that the majority of my customers for No Hassle Newsletters, if they didn't use my service, they're going to have to hire writers, they're going to have to hire designers and people to put the whole thing together. It's probably going to take a week or 2 weeks and cost them $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I think. So that's how I base. So you always want to base your prices on the value that you're delivering. Now, Dr. Carey, who I did interview for this section of the book, she agonized, she said, over raising her prices. And it was a lot of head trash. But, you know, she was having great success with her functional medicine and making people feel better, finding the root cause, as she says, and then making people feel better. One of the things that she did, because, you know, she's in my coaching program also, is she wrote a book. You know, so she took my lead, wrote a book, and she said the minute she saw her book and held it in her hands, something changed inside. She suddenly felt worthy, I think was her word, that now, you know, it's almost like I'm somebody, look at me, I'm an author, and, you know, this separates me from the other people who kind of purport to do what I do. So that was pretty powerful.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also, you know, not just the value, but the years leading up to this point, you know, and I think about, and I did, after I read that chapter, I raised my prices in my business, you know, last week, because it just, again, it motivated me. And, you know, also when you get clients and customers and patients saying, you should be charging more for this. That's a pretty cool thing too when you hear that. But it's, you know, it's the old the story that you hear, the plumber comes and he, to fix a problem, he just spins one screw, and they go, that cost me $200. And he said, you know, $1 to spin the screw and $199 to know which one to twist. So it's definitely, you know, all the relationship, you know, for me, it's all the relationships that I've cultivated and nurtured and grown over the past couple of years that allows me to charge what I charge today. And, you know, same goes for anyone's business. It's all of your experience and the value that you provide. So I love that. And it's, I want to tell everyone to get this book and read it and take action, because, you know, just that one chapter motivated me to make one change in my business that, and people are, I'm still getting new clients, you know, people are not hesitating to sign up. So really, really good.
You know what's cool about the pricing? Mm-hmm. When you charge more, you know, in most cases, unless you're like this commodity and there's just like tons and tons of people next door to you doing what you do, but even then, there's a way to separate yourself. But let's just say when you get comfortable raising your prices and people are happy with not only the service and the value you're delivering, but the experience, they will pay more. You know, Gary George, who's also in my coaching program, he does a lot of my Facebook marketing and things like that. He also shared in the book that he had a hard time, and what you just referenced is what made me think of Gary. He says, I used to think, okay, so I can go in there, do this, that, and the other thing, and I drive traffic to websites, but in reality, it took me half an hour to do, and he says, I used to charge an hourly fee. He says, then I realized it wasn't simply the hour I did it. It was the years and years of experience learning how to provide that service. So that was a big eye-opener for him. And then I also told him, by the way, it's not only all the years of experience, but the traffic that you're driving to your clients' websites, what is that worth?
Right.
So, and I, you know, let's say, just for the sake of discussion, because these aren't Gary's prices, let's say he was charging $400 to do something, and in reality he should have been charging $2,400. Well, if the $2,400 seems like a lot, yet he's driving an enormous amount of traffic to somebody's business and they're gaining new business, well, that's a great return on the investment. So it's not even the price that's a consideration, is what is it doing for your client? What's the return they're getting on what you're doing for them?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I totally agree. I love the whole concept and idea about raising prices. I could talk about that for a while, but let's move on to some other
All right,
topic.
Cool.
So one of your chapters is called Delegate or Stay Small. And I know this, again, this whole book resonates with me. I can probably think of an example in my business that I've, you know, applied with every lesson. But why don't you talk a little bit about delegating or staying small?
Yep. And I actually write in the first paragraph, I said I could actually write this whole chapter in just these three words, delegate or die, or delegate or stay small. Because here's the reality. Every big business today starts small. When you think of like a giant company like Dell Computer, that started it, Michael Dell started that in his dorm room when he was in college. So everybody starts small. And when you do that as the entrepreneur, the bootstrapping, you know, lean and mean entrepreneur, you start doing whatever it is that you're going to do. So for me, it was the newsletter writing and newsletter designs. But in the early years, I'm also the bookkeeper. I'm doing client support. I'm the delivery guy. I'm overseeing the printing and mailing. I'm going to the post office. You know, I'm doing everything that has to be done in your business is what you do. That's important in whatever time period, you know, describes the early lean startup period. But there is a point in every business where you start gaining momentum. And when you gain momentum and you start doing more of what your core services, and a lot of times, hopefully that translates into what I call your high revenue generating activity. So for me, if me doing more newsletters initially is what pays the big money, I then need to get help and have somebody do the books, or somebody do this, somebody go to the post office, somebody stuff those envelopes, and you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That stuff that you can hire somebody for $10 an hour, $30, $40, $50 an hour, whatever you hire that person for, if that allows you to focus then on the higher revenue generating activity, that's a good thing. Now, what happens for a lot of people, entrepreneurs, is they have this expression, well, I can do it cheaper, faster, and better than anybody. And I think in the book I said, if I was to complete that sentence, which they won't say out loud, it's like, I can do it faster, cheaper, and better than anyone else, and I'll be darned if I'm going to pay someone to do something I can clearly do myself. I want all that money in my pocket, and I don't want to work with anybody or have anybody working with me, period. You know, something like that. And it's scary, so I totally get that. Now, here's the thing. When you hire your first person, your second or third, by the way, you know, I always talk about for the last 3 years that I've got 9 virtual assistants. I now have 10. I hired another one last week. And the reason I did that is because I liken it to, Jessica, when you're out exercising or hiking or, you know, on the treadmill. And, you know, they say when you're thirsty, in other words, when you have a dry mouth and you're thirsty, you should have been drinking before that. And so if you're working in your business in the early days, you're doing everything's fine, but then you start getting clients and the business starts chugging along, gaining momentum, what happens is, okay, the phone's not getting answered quite as fast, or a call's not getting returned, email's not getting answered, you're not shipping out the book the same day like you promised to do. Different things start slipping because you start prioritizing. You become a fireman. Entrepreneurs are notoriously firefighters. They put out whatever fires are the biggest at the time, and things start slipping away, and that's when quality goes down, and that's when business starts suffering. That is the same thing as your business saying, I'm thirsty, I need water, I need help. So when you start getting help, and by the way, you know, you don't have to hire people like 40 hours and benefits and vacation and health care. You can hire virtual assistants to do just about anything. It's just basically, you know, 1099 contract workers. And so if you even hired somebody for 10 hours a week to do some admin work, you know, 10 hours a week, let's say you even pay them 15 or 20, let's say you pay them $20 an hour, that's $200 a week, right? And I know when you're small and cash flow's tight, that might seem like a lot. But I guarantee you that if you think about, whoever's listening to me right now, think about what's not getting done, think about your to-do list, think about you having all of a sudden 10 extra hours this week. What would you do with it? Most likely you're going to go to the thing that's most important that could likely bring in new business. So that $200 you spend to give you 10 hours by freeing up task-oriented work, that's going to pay huge dividends in your growth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, this next concept I want to ask you about can definitely be applied to the idea of delegating and hiring help, whether it's a virtual assistant or an employee, you know, based on what your business is. And one thing that I've learned is that good is good enough, because when you hire somebody, obviously you want somebody that's just as good as you, if not better. And the reality is that, listen, if you find a great person, they might be absolutely amazing, just what you need. But a lot of times you hire someone and it takes time to train them, to get them to where you need them to be. And so for a while you have to say, you know, I know you've said this before in terms of, you know, you see some, like one of your team members answer an email and you probably look at it and say, oh, I wouldn't write it just like that. But you said, you know what, it's getting answered at a good time. And if it was up to me, I wouldn't have gotten to it till tomorrow. So good is good enough. And I know this applies to a lot of other things too. So do you want to expand on that lesson, good is good enough?
Yep. So that's in the chapter, Decide Not to Be Perfect. And what I say is perfection is the enemy of progress. It's a business crippler and possibly a business killer, because people who start businesses, unless you come out of high school and you start business or college, like very few people do. Most people have a job, work for somebody or something before they become an entrepreneur. And so you have ingrained that when you're working for somebody, you're not going to put out anything that's even remotely got the possibility of being seen as a mistake, right? God forbid the owner's golfing buddy says, hey, I don't know, you might want to get a proofreader. And then he calls you into the office when he gets back. It's not pleasant, right? So you have that kind of mentality. But when you are an entrepreneur and things are happening, and one of the things that will feed a business more than anything is momentum and speed. You know, wealth rewards risk and wealth rewards speed. So getting things done fast, getting things out there is a good thing for the business. Now, unfortunately, you know, if you strive to do everything to utter perfection, nothing usually gets done, right? I mean, so the good is good enough sometimes gets a bad rap, as an expression that I first heard Dan Kennedy say, but it doesn't mean you put out crappy work. Not at all. I strive to put out the best work I can, but then I do push the go button. Interestingly enough, the book we're talking about, Decide, The Ultimate Success Trigger, I was thumbing through it just the other day, and I spotted a mistake. And I think I put before you boast, and it says before you boost. Now, boost didn't get caught in, you know, in spell checker. I know my editor and I both read that book at least 30 times between us. Something is going to get missed. Now, here's the thing. You need to be able to be comfortable. So this is a mindset tweak. get comfortable with the fact that you're putting out great work, you're putting out work that's got value. I know this book is going to help a lot of people. And so the flip side is, if I waited until I read it and maybe the 50th time I might have seen the word boost instead of boast, you know, that book is not helping people and it's not making me any money besides. So you got to stop getting so hung up on the desire to be perfect and just be good or be great. There's a big difference.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. That's what I talked about in a video that I did yesterday, is just start. You know, I see this, like, you know, as you know, I work with a lot of podcasters and people that want to be interviewed on shows, and there, I can't tell you how many times they hear, well, I don't have the perfect mic yet, or I don't have my questions ready yet. You know, there's a million reasons. Oh, it's just not perfect. I've got clients who haven't launched their podcast in, you know, 6 months, a year. And again, it doesn't need to be perfect, because, you know, you just have to start and you can get better as you go. So I totally, totally love that. And, you know, naturally, when good is good enough and there are mistakes, people are going to catch them. You're going to get criticism. Why do you need to be immune to that criticism?
Oh, my gosh, because, again, criticism can be a business crippler, because everybody has opinions. They're everywhere, and people are not shy about sharing them. And that's another kind of, you know, almost like a problem, if you want to think of it like this, with social media. It's easy to share it, you know. I mean, can you imagine 10 or 15 years ago, you had to call somebody, or, you know, I guess email was around 15 years ago, but think of the time when you had to actually call somebody or write somebody and tell it to them. It was a lot less apparent there. Now you can post in the comment section on a blog, you can send somebody an email. It's kind of a, you know, gutless thing to do, but people do it. And so you, as an entrepreneur who wants to seek growth, you have to build up a wall of immunity to this kind of stuff, because it is going to come. Now, there's an expression, the higher up the flagpole you go, the more your butt hangs out, right? But I think that's okay, because the view's better up there. And what that means is, the only people who are getting themselves even exposed to be criticized are those people who are doing something. The only people who are not criticized are people who aren't doing anything. So, I mean, if you never write a book, if you never go out and speak, if you never do an interview like this or do anything that's going to be exposed to the public or your potential clients, you know, you're not going to grow your business, but it's because you're afraid to make a mistake and you're afraid to get criticized for it. I mean, people will take you to task, and there's a very small percentage of people. When I think about it, one of the things I have, Jessica, here, I learned this from our buddy James Malinchek. He has a whole room full of, like, cards and notes that people send him. I've got a file drawer that's packed with cards and notes, and people write nice things and say, oh, thank you for this, thank you for that, your book meant a lot to me, whatever it is. And so when you look at that, when you start getting criticized, I sometimes will open the drawer and just read a couple things. But the point is, you could get like 20 or 100 really nice comments, and people will just have some great things to say about what you do and how you market, whatever. And then all of a sudden, one chowderhead sends something that's really nasty, and that will send you into a tailspin. And so, you know, what I think is, you got to get over that, build up your wall to immunity. There's a two-stage filter that I've learned to use when that happens, because even years later, when I get something like that, it's still like, oh, holy crap. You know, it tweaks you a little bit, and you kind of irks you a little bit. So the filter that I use, number one, do I know this person? Do I trust them? You know, do I value their opinion? If it's just somebody I don't even know, you know, I imagine it's just somebody sitting in their basement, you know, cranking out crap, right? And the other part of the filter, the stage two, is it somebody who's earned the right to share this opinion? You know, if I was be doing, so I'll give you a real world example. When I started doing my podcast, three plus years, you know, I do them on a conference line. Now, today, you know, people with just some very, not even a lot of money, with some mics and some simple technology, and you can make something that sounds like an incredible radio show. I just haven't gone there yet. Some people say, Jim, you ought to get your sound quality up. What I've been known for is somebody who provides a ton of information that's going to help people market and grow a business. I choose to be based you know, I choose to have people base their opinions on me based on the content and the help that I'm providing. If you're looking for, like, you know, studio quality, this, that, and the other thing, you're probably not going to resonate with me. But that's okay, too, because here's the deal. You are going to resonate with the people who you're meant to be attracted to, and there's going to be a percentage of the people who are not going to resonate with what you offer, and that's okay, too, because you're not meant to do business with everybody.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we've gone through so many topics here. I would love to finish out with probably the most important, it's the umbrella lesson, is wealth rewards risk and wealth rewards speed. How so?
That's one of my favorite expressions. And people, well, what does that mean? Well, first of all, let me talk about speed. Speed of implementation. Your business loves speed. When things happen fast, there's growth associated with that. When you're moving at a snail's pace, there's not a lot of growth. I mean, that's a very easy way to think about it. So the faster you get stuff done, you know, when I wrote my first book, The Magic of Newsletter Marketing, it took me 18 months. I did this book in just under 60 days. And again, it's. I guess you get better. You can get faster and more efficient with experience. So that's a given. But you know, the more information you put out, we live in a society and kind of an age where we are all content driven. People just have a hunger for more information. And so the faster that you're able to put out content of all different kinds, written and audio, video, etc., the more able you are to attract new people to your business. So wealth definitely rewards speed of implementation. All right. The second thing is risk. You know, it's kind of interesting that, you know, when people think of, you know, finances, like let's say you had $100 or $1,000 and you had an opportunity to, and you wanted to grow it. What I liken it to, Jessica, is this. There's three types of risk. There's the savings account, there's the stock market, and then there's the casino. So in the savings account, then I kind of liken it to entrepreneurialism. So the savings account entrepreneur is like a regular savings and loan. If you put that $1,000 in the bank account, you can go there 6 months or 10 years from now, and that $1,000 will still be there. It might have earned, you know, about a dollar in interest because it's very, very low risk. It's probably only paying like 0.5% interest. Very safe. That kind of entrepreneur, what I call a savings account entrepreneur, will start their business with what they have. If they've got $1,000, they start with that. And they say to themselves, I'm not going to risk anything else. In other words, I'm not going to borrow money. I'm not going to get a loan. I'm not going to use credit cards. I'm not going to do anything unless the business funds it. So as the business grows, I will reinvest the profits of the business. Look, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's going to be a very long row to hoe, so to speak. You know, and, you know, I know somebody, probably at least half a dozen people I can think of that would love to come to my Dream Business Academy or possibly even join my coaching program, and they say, well, I can't afford it right now, but when I can, I will come. Well, you know what? That time almost never comes because you have to be willing to invest in yourself. So the second level of entrepreneurialism is called the stock market entrepreneur. And the stock market, you can put $1,000 in, and, you know, without risking really huge, you could probably get today 5%, maybe even 7 or 8%. And unless the stock market went totally kaflooey, that $1,000 is safe. It could go away. In other words, you're not going to lose the $1,000 principal in a savings account, but in the stock market, there is a small risk of doing that. So you're risking more, but you're also going to get a higher return on investment. So that entrepreneur, the stock market entrepreneur, is somebody who's okay risking. And if for me, I'll share my story. So in 2007, when I'm growing my new online business, I still had a mountain of debt from the early years, and the business cash flow-wise was not throwing off enough for me to do two things. Number one, I wanted to go exhibit at this conference. And the booth space alone, just to rent the 10x10 booth, was $5,000. But I also had to build some kind of a display. I had to fly there, hotel. It was easily a $7,500 decision, of which the business could not afford. So the savings account entrepreneur would not have done that. I recognized, I kind of did the pros and cons, and then I decided to take action and invest. I knew that the 1,000 people that were there, I would probably meet at least 200, maybe 300 of them, and they would become, you know, good prospects for clients. As it is, I closed, I think, 18 new clients that weekend, and then I got some more clients afterwards through follow-up. Now, the fact of the matter is it did not immediately generate $7,500 in revenue, but certainly over, I would say, 6 months or a year, it certainly did. But that was, I was willing to risk for the bigger reward. And then the third level is the casino. And, you know, if you take $1,000 and put it on the craps table and you hit, you could, like, you know, double, triple, quadruple your money, but you could also lose it in a heartbeat. And some of the people who have really, really big thinking and a high tolerance for risk, I think of somebody like Fred Smith, who started Federal Express in the 70s. He didn't just start with a Cessna plane and start delivering packages. He bought jets, and he flew those jets across the country and back, sometimes with three overnight envelopes at $20 a piece. I mean, that was serious risk. I mean, that's big cojones, if I can say that. And it turned into a gigantic business, but there's no way that he would have been able to grow that business based on cash flow alone. So I know that's probably a long answer, but that's kind of the whole thing about when you risk more, if it's a good risk, you are going to be rewarded. So when you look at really successful people who are doing really, really well, it's not that they're lucky. It's that they had a good idea and they were willing to invest and kind of put their money where their mouth is and grow their business.
Amen to that. Absolutely. I could not agree more. And, you know, we're going to close this out. I'm going to hand the quote-unquote mic over back to you. But I just want to really, you know, give my genuine testimony for this book. It is a great book. It's the first book that actually you have an audio book for, which is awesome. That's another thing that you've taken a lot of action this past, you know, 12 to 18 months with writing a sixth book, doing your live event, doing an audio book. So really, really excited to see this book get in the hands of a lot of people. So I'm going to hand the mic back over to you. Thanks for letting me interview you today.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks for being a great host and a great interviewer. And, you know, the audio book, there's a chapter that we talked about not being perfect, good is good enough. When I recorded that, it was 10 hours for me to talk out the book. And the first audio, when I listened to it, the quality was not what I wanted. Now, it's funny because your brother and my son, who's kind of a musician and audio guy, I asked him, could you fix this? He said no. And so I had a decision to make. I could put it out and be good as good enough, but I also, and you know, in the earlier days, I might have done that. But there's a point where as you grow your business, as you get further, you know, have a bigger and larger audience, I made the decision that I was going to invest another 10 hours, and I did it again with better equipment and, you know, better sound room and things like that, and it sounds really good. So, I mean, there's always choices you have to make and decisions you have to decide. Okay, I'm either moving forward or I'm going to do it again. So I'm really excited about the audiobook for another reason, Jessica, is that because I didn't just read the written word. As I was reading the book, I would find myself sharing additional stories and giving more stuff than was just in the book. And so that's why I know a lot of people like audiobooks. So let me tell people where they can get the book.
Yeah.
The website is www.decideforsuccess.com. book.com, decide for F-O-R, successbook.com. And what we're doing, another first for me, so in addition to having this book, also in Kindle and audiobook, what we're doing is we are giving away 500 free copies, not a digital download. I'm giving away 500 actual books. And the only thing we're asking is that the people who order it pick up the shipping and handling, which is $6.95. But we're going to do the first 500 for only $6.95, and then I got some other things. We're going to give you like three training videos. I got a special report and some other things. But for $6.95, there's a reason I want to do that. First and foremost, I want the book out there because I truly believe that the entrepreneurs and small business owners of this country are the driving force. They're going to be what turns this economy around. I get it out of the ditch and really start roaring again. You know, and that creates jobs. It helps everybody. And I really believe that this book, and I'm doing a commercial for myself, but I really believe that this book is going to help people that are sputtering and kind of stuck right now. It's a very much in-your-face coaching session. And I will tell you this, reading the book, you actually might feel a little uncomfortable because I'm really kind of putting my finger in your chest, so to speak. But if you can take this and learn from what I did and learn from what other people have shared in the book, it's going to make you a more successful business owner. So www.decideforsuccessbook.com. And you want to go and be one of the first 500 people and get an absolutely free copy. And that's awesome. So, Jessica, thank you again
for being
a great host. And that wraps up, folks, that wraps up this very special episode of Stick Like Glue Radio with your special guest, me, and rock star interviewer Jessica Rhodes from interviewconnections.com. Stick Like Glue is the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers. Why? So they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. I am your host, Jim Palmer, your dream business coach, and I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. Be sure to check out DreamBizAcademy.com, DreamBizAcademy.com for information on my next event, which is happening May 7th, 8th, and 9th in beautiful San Diego. If you are an entrepreneur who wants to grow a more profitable business faster, you need to be there. So all the details are at DreamBizAcademy.com. That is a wrap for now. So watch for another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio this week. Until then, keep taking action, keep moving forward, and don't ever, ever, ever give up. Now go out there and do something nice for somebody today. Take care, everybody.
You've been listening to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Stick Like Glue Radio features Jim Palmer's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice for action-oriented entrepreneurs. To make sure you don't miss a single profit-boosting show, subscribe to this podcast at www.getjimpalmer.com. If you know other entrepreneurs looking for the fastest way to higher profits in their business, please tell them about the Stick Like Glue Radio podcast. Now go and implement what you've learned and boost your profits. See you next week for more Stick Like Glue Radio.